Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Just days into the long-awaited new year, a day of infamy. We'll look at the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol this week and how Wisconsin and Minnesota lawmakers responded.
This is Banana Republic crap.
Plus, another look at painful stories of 2020. And an uplifting note with the music of Rachel Kilgore.
I give love, I give.
All that after this.
How deep's the cold, how quick you sink beneath my skin.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
That's the sound of a mob having breached the U.S. Capitol as it made its way through Statuary Hall yesterday to disrupt the session of Congress meeting to certify the election of Joe Biden as president. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We had plans for a final year-in-review show today, but like many other plans in the entire country, things changed with the attack on the U.S. Capitol yesterday. Even if you weren't in Washington, and we certainly weren't, you couldn't help but be affected by it. So instead today, we'll bring you a few of our favorite stories from last year, but first we'll review just what's going on in our region this week with our weekly news and review team. Joining me, as always, is Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report Bureau, based in the Twin Ports. Hello, Brooks.
Hey, Robin.
And our own Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, of course, everyone in the world should be aware of the storming of the U.S. Capitol by supporters of President Trump yesterday, who were egged on by the president at a rally beforehand. The session they disrupted was the official counting by Congress of electoral votes certifying the election of Joe Biden as president. Those proceedings included objections to several states' electors on unsupported claims of widespread voter fraud put forth by a minority of congressmen, all Republican, which was one of the motivators for the mob. So how did our own congressmen come down on this? Which way did they vote?
Yeah, well, U.S. Representative Tom Tiffany, who represents the 7th Congressional District in a large swath of northern Wisconsin, he was among 121 House Republicans who voted to object to counting Biden's electors from Arizona. That was a vote that was made possible by several Republican U.S. senators, including Wisconsin U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. And Tiffany also was later among 138 Republicans who voted to object to Biden's Pennsylvania electors.
We should say Representative Fitzgerald is from Juneau, which is about halfway between Milwaukee and Wisconsin Dells. Another Wisconsin representative, Mike Gallagher of Green Bay, took a decidedly different approach. He issued this statement while hunkered down in his office as the mob was storming the Capitol.
Right now, I am sheltered in place in my office because we have protesters who have stormed the Capitol, clashing with Capitol police, forcing their way into Statuary Hall. The Vice President of the United States was just rushed off the floor of the House by Secret Service. This is Banana Republic crap that we're watching happen right now. And the objectors over the last 2 days have told me there is no problem with just having a debate. We know we're not going to succeed, so we're just going to object. We're going to have a debate. We'll voice people's concerns, and then we won't actually overturn our entire system of representative government. So nothing bad will happen. There will be no cost to this effort. This is the cost of this effort. This is the cost of countenancing an effort by Congress to overturn the election and telling thousands of people that there is a legitimate shot of overturning the election today, even though you know that is not true. We have got to stop this. Mr. President, you have got to stop this. You are the only person
who can call this off. Call it off. The election is over. Call it off. This is bigger than you. It's bigger than any member of Congress. It is about the United States of America, which is more important than any politician. Call it off. It's over.
Despite Representative Gallagher's very strong appeal, those objections did continue when Congress reconvened on Wednesday night. And, Danny, there was another angle relevant to Wisconsin, correct?
Yeah, a Texas House representative objected to counting Wisconsin's electors for Biden, but the objection was signed by a member of the House and not the Senate, so Vice President Mike Pence ruled it couldn't move forward.
And Brooks, Representative Stauber on the Minnesota side?
Yeah, 8th District Republican Representative Pete Stauber, who represents a huge swath of northeastern Minnesota, issued a statement before the violent insurrection began saying he would not vote to oppose the Electoral College certification. So he was not going to stand in the way and join his Republican colleagues in challenging the results of the election. The two Minnesota representatives who did were Republicans Michelle Fischbach and Jim Hagedorn. You know, Stauber had previously, you know, remained silent for months following the election, despite the clear outcome, and let the president's legal failures mount. Stauber then signed on to the amicus brief, joined by many of those same Republicans who on Wednesday opposed the Electoral College certification, but later backtracked in a letter to constituents and started referring in late December to Joe Biden as president-elect.
Well, as all this was going on in Washington yesterday, and stay tuned to WPR News for the updates on it, which we will say, by the way, we are recording this on Thursday, so anything can happen as you listen to this on Friday. We had our own crisis, and I think I would call it a crisis, in our area with a major internet outage, and actually a phone outage for me, which I don't know if was related. Danny, you have a statement from Spectrum about the internet outage.
Yeah, you know, and I was as frustrated as you were, Robin, yesterday with all of this. But Spectrum said on Twitter later on Wednesday afternoon that Spectrum customers in Minnesota and Wisconsin were experiencing an outage. And they said that we are continuing to work to restore services as quickly as possible, though there is no estimate as to when this would be completed. That generated a lot of angry comments, as you can imagine.
Right. And it also led to the show we're doing today, because frankly, we were working on it and we do need internet to produce the show. And by the way, if they said Minnesota and Wisconsin, I could add a little bit to that, that I found news reports showing that it was also in the UP, and Minnesota was all the way down to Brainerd. So if you can make a mental map of that, you can see it's a pretty wide swath that was affected. Brooks, is there any good news report? I think you had something that you wanted to share.
Yes, good news. Well, sort of good news in the COVID-19 era anyway. We're told this week that the annual John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon, which is the largest sled dog race in the lower 48, will go on as planned, but without spectators this year. The start date is still scheduled for January 31st, and organizers have been plotting for months how to hold this storied tradition safely during the pandemic. Also this week, we learned that Duluth's and Superior's Homegrown Music Festival will go on this year, but in an all-virtual capacity for over the first week of May. For those who forget what it's like to go to live concerts, it's a week-long series of shows at a number of venues across the Twin Ports, but this year they are planning to just stream different events online and try, perhaps, to get a couple secret shows out there, if they can, if we're that far along in beating back the pandemic. But for now, you just got to check it out online. It will be free. Donations, of course, are encouraged, but that is one benefit that anyone anywhere can tune in to Twin Ports performers for free online. So some good news. How about that?
I'm definitely looking forward to it, and you can look forward to hearing at least one of those homegrown performers later in the show. Well, we've been speaking with Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks so much, Robin.
You can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport. And be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. And we've also been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
Coming up, some of our most memorable stories from 2020.
I won't be me. Wanna be my truest self. I wanna work hard and play hard to get my fill. And I wanna see you. See you in the afternoon light. With your doubts and your certainties. I am scared, but I am steady. I could love you if you are ready.
Simply Superior News and issues from a superior point of view, tailored to mirror your life and interests.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. As we noted, we were initially planning on taking one last look back on our major regional news stories in the terrible year that was 2020, only to adjust those plans somewhat with what's starting out to be an equally crazy 2021. We will take a couple of looks back, however, starting with the reaction in the Twin Ports to the death of George Floyd in the custody of Minneapolis police, and on a more uplifting note, the music of Duluth local folk singer Made Good, Rachel Kilgore. Here first is a digest of our program from June 5th, 10 days after the death of George Floyd, and a wrenching video seen around the world that sparked outrage and calls for an end to racism once and for all. That chant was heard in Duluth last week and around the world as thousands of protesters hit the streets demanding justice for George Floyd, the Minneapolis man who died May 25th after an encounter with police, including one officer who held his knee against his neck for nearly 9 minutes. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Less than 150 miles from our studios in Superior is Ground Zero, the streetscape outside of Cup Foods in Minneapolis South Side, where George Floyd repeatedly told Officer Derek Chauvin, "I can't breathe," and then breathed his last. For the last week, protests have erupted there and across the country, and now the world, over yet another gruesome death of a black man in an encounter with police. One of those protests was in Duluth on Saturday, co-sponsored by the Duluth Branch NAACP, the Superior African Heritage Community, and more than half a dozen other organizations. 1,000 people, nearly 100% of them wearing face masks to protect against the coronavirus, crowded the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial and marched to Duluth's Government Center Plaza, where they held an 8-minute, 46-second period of silence, symbolic of the time George Floyd lay pinned by the neck by Officer Chauvin. Numerous speakers expressed outrage, action, and simply raw emotion over the injustice. Here are some of their voices.
I can't breathe for years now. And this is the movement that's growing nationally. Thank you so much for coming out. The violence is so incredible. Whose lives matter? Whose lives matter?
My name is Kim Young, and I'm an elder in the African Heritage community here. I wasn't scheduled to speak, but I was called last night by my sisters, my Native sisters, and asked to come and say a few words. I've led many of these marches over the year. I want every white person right now to raise your hand.
Do Black Lives Matter to you?
Yes!
Then you need to tear down the racist system that perpetuates the racism and systemic oppression. I don't want you to tear down buildings. The foundation of this country is rotten. The house that sits upon this foundation is tinkering on the brink of collapse. One swift wind will tear it down, and that's what we are demanding. We're no longer asking. We're no longer begging. Our Boston Tea Party was this week. You want peace in these streets? We are traumatized, and I'm not okay. I'm not going to stay on this microphone long because I promised my daughter I would come over here and speak and go back. Because of this COVID, I'm a vulnerable adult. But this was that important that I put my bra on, my righteous armor. My righteous armor. I came back from retirement. I retired to take care of my body and my soul and my family. And yes, I'm a grandmother raising two young black grandsons, and I want them to live. I want us all to not be inundated with the tragedies that are now becoming classic TV to show a black man's dead body on the TV. We are standing here today for justice for George and every other black name on the list that has been killed by police brutality, by police misconduct, by police bullets. Where we stand with signs in front of them while white armed men storm capitals and go home to their families. Where we have to prepare for a march so that we don't get molested by police or outside people trying to agitate. Don't let them take our movement. Don't let them take our power. And you ain't gonna take our lives no more, cause we are done dying!
Cedric Alexander is a former chief of police for DeKalb County, Georgia, which contains part of Atlanta, and later was chief of police in Rochester, New York. He has a doctorate in clinical psychology from Wright State University in Ohio and is a past president of the National Association of Black Law Enforcement Executives. He's a frequent guest on CNN and now a first-time guest on Simply Superior. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. Thank you.
I want to go right to the neck hold. Are they ever allowed? And aren't officers taught basically judo, where the idea of the martial art is to prevail against your adversary?
Well, that's true. Police departments, they teach a variety of different defensive tactics. But to be perfectly honest with you, they nowhere come near being any kind of experts or proficient in judo in that regard. Neck holds and choke holds have been outlawed in many police departments, certainly within recent years. But in the case of what we saw here with Floyd, he was not resisting, and he was on his stomach, handcuffed behind his back. And that technique that you saw is not taught anywhere that I'm aware of. So that officer who killed him, who literally killed him right in front of all of us, was using a technique that he had obviously decided he was going to use. And as you saw, how cavalier he was about it, even as the man begged for breath, begged for his dying breath. Training has to be ongoing. and that is a huge piece of this, is that officers want the training, but oftentimes logistically it becomes difficult to take people out of their assignments and get them in training without having enough officers on the road, having officers doing investigation, or much needed administrative work that need to be done. So that is always a challenge. However, that being said, today we're just going to have to find new creative ways to deliver ongoing training to our officers, not just in terms of self-defense, but it's got to be more than just going to a training block and checking a block. It has to be ongoing. Firearms training need to be ongoing. De-escalation training, ongoing. Implicit and explicit bias training, ongoing. Learning how and building relationships with communities have to become a part of the evaluation of each officer.
Although Officer Derek Chauvin was arrested and charged with third-degree murder just days after George Floyd died on May 25th, the other three officers involved initially remained free. That changed after Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison took over as lead in the case from Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman. And this week, all four officers were charged and a count against Chauvin raised to second-degree murder. Yet there were errors in the filing documents. I spoke with a seasoned criminal defense attorney about those issues Wednesday night after the new charges were filed. We're speaking with Andrew Gordon. He's the Associate Director of the Legal Rights Center's Community Defense Program in St. Paul. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Robin. I'm glad to be here.
Have you had a chance to look at the filings?
Yes, I have.
One thing I noticed, and I'm not pretending to be a lawyer, is in the original filings, we found typos. Mr. Floyd, at certain points, was referred to as Mr. Lloyd, and likewise, Officer Lane, L-A-N-E, was referred to as Officer Lang, L-A-N-G. I actually wrote to Attorney General Ellison's office about that, and they responded saying what you pointed out was important. But the new charges actually repeat some of the errors from the previous filings. So how important are typos like these?
At the end of the day, they're not very important. The facial inaccuracies don't change the elements of the offense. It's maybe not evidence of best practice, but they certainly do happen. And I think generally the way you can think about it is that most of the jurors, the individuals who would, let's say, deliberate on a case like this, they will never see the complaint.
Well, from a more professional viewpoint, what are your concerns?
I think there's still deficiencies with the fact that count two remains a third-degree murder charge. Third-degree murder, just from a purely legal perspective, is not the applicable charge. The classic third-degree murder is someone shoots into a crowd of people. There's no intended target. You're just shooting indiscriminately. You end up hitting someone and killing them, right? Mm-hmm. So we know third-degree murder doesn't apply. It's a little bit concerning that, but in amending the complaint, they didn't remove the third-degree murder charge.
I will remind our listeners that, however unpopular it may be to say so, that all the defendants in this case, as in any case, are innocent until proven guilty. So is there anything in this complaint that, from a defense point of view, could be capitalized off of?
Well, I think a successful defense is going to have to really hit home that Officer Chauvin or any of the other officers, their actions did not cause the death, that there were other contributing factors. So Mr. Floyd's drug use, he had a history of heart disease. It certainly is going to be this place where I think a defense attorney is going to focus at trial.
That was Andrew Gordon of the Legal Rights Center in St. Paul, preceded by National Policing Consultant Cedric Alexander, speaking with me in June about police protocols and a case against the officers charged with murder and abetting the death of George Floyd. Also that month, another high-profile racial case captivated the Twin Ports, the 100th anniversary of the 1920 triple lynching in Duluth of Elias Clayton, Elmer Jackson, and Isaac McGee. Plans for a gathering of 10,000 to mark the date were scrapped because of the pandemic. But the event did attract Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison and Governor Tim Walz. The governor announced the posthumous pardon of Max Mason, another black man who escaped the lynching, but had been convicted in the fabricated rape of a white woman for which the others were hanged. Here are their remarks.
Thank you all for coming today. It is a solemn day. It's one that I don't think things happen by chance, where things come together and we're aligned. This community has been working to tell this story and in reconciliation for an awful long time. Without the connection to Mr. Clayton, Mr. Jackson, Mr. McGee, and Max Mason, it's easy then not to see that there's a direct line that descends down for 100 years to George Floyd laying on the streets in 38th in Chicago. And the inability to face systemic issues of racism, of inequalities, of educational attainment gaps, of home ownership gaps, of healthcare gaps, and to be very Minnesotan about it and just not really want to talk about it because it's a painful conversation. I want to be here to say thank you to this community for not going in that direction and having that healing conversation, creating that space down there that after the murder of George Floyd, that space was probably needed more than anything in this city. And that is because of the vision of people who understood that. So I can tell you that Friday's historic hearing on a posthumous pardon of Max Mason was many years in the making. And in fact, we set the timing of it for Friday back in December. And since that time between COVID-19, the murder of George Floyd, the civil unrest and what we've seen in Minneapolis and the soul searching that not just us as a state, but as a nation and a world have been doing happened for a reason. And a lot of that comes back to this point, comes back to the city of Duluth, a great city, one leading on so many fronts and one that is leading on the idea that before you can have healing and movement forward, you have to have truth and reconciliation.
Much conversation is going on around policing today, and it should. But the police are a microcosm of our society. We gotta reform the police. We gotta completely transform the police. But we can't think we're gonna stop there and have a just society, because those officers are made up, I come from our society. And the people who are recruited and will join those police departments, if they carry the same attitudes that are alive in our society, will carry out that same oppression that we saw with George Floyd and Sandra Bland and Walter Scott and Philando Castile and Eric Garner and Tamir Rice, and the list goes on.
Those were remarks in June by Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison, preceded by Governor Tim Walz, in Duluth on the 100th anniversary of the lynchings of Elmer Jackson, Elias Clayton, and Isaac McGee. We'll be back with the music of Rachel Kilgore after this.
I've been dreaming about a garden. I wanna be the kind of girl that doesn't kill.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. As every music fan knows, the COVID-19 pandemic brought an end to most public performances, leading many musicians to turn around mid-tour and head home indefinitely. Many of them found new venues in the online world, and we did our part, and we still are, by opening up our airwaves to local performers. One of those was Rachel Kilgore, a Duluth native who took the folk and singer-songwriting scene by storm on the national stage. In May, she joined us from her home in Duluth. Here's our conversation and her music. We're thrilled to continue our music series with Rachel Kilgore. She's clearly one of the Twin Ports A-listers, and if that doesn't impress you, she's equally popular in her erstwhile home in Boston. Rachel was already well known in the Twin Ports when she won the grand prize in the International New Song Music Performance Competition in 2015, followed by the top prize in the Kerrville New Folk Contest 2 years later. She's played at Lincoln Center in New York, the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., and the Sundance Film Festival. And now she joins us from her living room in Duluth. Welcome to Simply Superior, Rachel.
Hi, thanks, Robin. Thanks for having me.
So is Duluth home again, or were you just stuck here when the travel bans came up?
I'm happily stuck here when the travel bans came up. I actually was in Boston up until about, I think, the last day of February, and planned to come home, and my partner was actually in Boston. She was in a grad program at New England Conservatory, mm-hmm. and she actually ended up coming back, too, was coming back for spring break for a visit, and then never went back, and I never went back either, so we've just been pulled up here. We do have, a house here in Duluth. It's a rental property and a house that we're fixing up, so we've got lots of projects to keep us busy here. And I think I can speak for both of us when I say that we are very happy to not be in Boston while this is happening. I think when the virus started taking shape, it felt much safer to be in Duluth.
Right, absolutely.
In a smaller town. Just to
Boston is actually, I believe, is like number two in the country behind New York.
So. I'm so grateful to be able to still go outside and get into nature and...
Right. And did you already have the home in Duluth when you sort of impromptu made the decision?
We actually got this house this past summer. My dad was a contractor, so I really like doing fix-up projects. And so we got a house that was in quite a bit of disrepair, and we've been fixing it up and got some really lovely tenants to move in the first unit. So as musicians, our income streams can be largely unpredictable. So I think getting into property ownership and rental income has been really helpful just to like give us a little stability. Yeah, Duluth will continue to be a home base, and I think I will always spend a significant amount of time in Boston and on the East Coast. And my partner travels quite a bit in Europe as well. With a duo she has, so. Mm-hmm.
You've said my partner three times, and my rule is three times you have to identify the person. So.
Okay, her name is Sarah Payanen. She is a violinist, also from Minnesota, but not from Duluth, so mm-hmm. She's new to Duluth and is learning to love it.
And do you perform together?
Yeah, we do. We have... We have our own projects that we focus on, but together our duo is called Sound and Echo.
And I have noticed some violin work, so is that her perhaps?
That is, yes, you're right. That's true. She doesn't usually perform with me live, but I did come up with some string arrangements for my last EP, Game Changer.
Well, there we go. Because, see, I've known you long enough from when you were a violinist, not to say you're not one anymore, but that was your main gig.
Yeah. Violin was my primary instrument, and I really tucked it away for almost a decade. And it is not like riding a bike. It's actually quite painful to pick up a violin again after many years because it sounds so horrible. And you remember the days when it didn't. It's very hard to work through that again. So,
all right, let's hear one of the selections that has Sarah on violin.
The song Wild Mountain Time, which is an old Scottish folk song, picking out songs from our shared or not shared ancestral history, using old folk songs and then making new arrangements of them.
All right, let's take a listen.
Oh, the summertime is coming. And the trees are sweetly blooming, and the wild mountain time grows around the blooming heather. Will you go, lassie, go? Will you go, lassie? Will you go, lassie? Will you go, lassie? Will you go, lassie? Will you go?
Will you go, lassie?
Will you go?
Will you go, lassie?
Will you go?
Will you go, lassie?
Will you go?
That was Wild Mountain Time by our guest, Rachel Kilgore, with Sarah Payanen. And is it correct to say with? Because you two have your individual careers and then sometimes together careers. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yeah, well, we call ourselves Sound and Echo together as a duo.
That's a better way of putting it, and I should know who I'm talking to. Okay, yes. And another song that I hear violin pretty prominently on is Game Changer.
Yep, my latest recording is Game Changer, an EP. It's title track, and it's actually a song I wrote for Sarah.
All right.
I wanna be me, wanna be my truest. I wanna work hard and play hard to get my fill, and I wanna see you in the afternoon light, with your doubts and your certainties all in sight. I am scared, but I could love you if you are ready. Game changer, cling to me, fill your lungs with gold. Thank you. I could love you if you are ready.
We've just heard Game Changer by Rachel Kilgore with Sarah Pienen, a song that she wrote to Sarah Pienen. I have to say, your divorce, your previous relationship was pretty well known in the Twin Ports. One reason you were so well known is that that was part of your music. You had a song that actually almost became something of an anthem, correct, of the same-sex marriage campaign. Will You Marry Me?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny. That song actually, I wrote it for my grandparents who were not in a same-sex relationship. But singing it from the perspective of my grandfather, it has that feeling that I'm singing to a woman. But yeah, you're right. I did. I think often, but because I was an openly queer artist when I sang that song, it did have that sentiment. That's true.
Right. At a time when it was a big deal to be so, you know, which seems almost incredible a short time ago. But
I know. It's funny. It's shifted so much in my adulthood. I think of anything making me feel like I've lived a significant amount of life, the changes that we've made as a society in relationship to the LGBTQAI community.
Right.
Yeah, it's notable.
Right. The main thing is that the sky didn't fall when same-sex marriage happened, just in Minnesota, but the whole country. The next one is Garden.
Oh, yeah. I don't know about you, but the whole world is baking bread and growing garden to get through this thing. So for the last 2 years, I've really just been traveling all of the time, which it has its own benefits. I've met a lot of really wonderful people, and I've seen lots of parts of the country that I had never seen before. And but I've really been wanting to slow down and to plant myself a garden, amongst other things. So,
all right, let's take a listen.
Never be sad, it's fine.
And that was Garden by our guest, Rachel Kilgore. I notice that musicians aren't necessarily on the front lines of the open up now, even though, you can't speak for all musicians or paint them with the same brush, but somehow I don't get from your community or that part of your community, if you will, the same open up that I'm hearing from other quarters. Am I correct right about that?
I'm guessing we both are slightly biased in the musicians that we like. I can't say I have musician friends who are hoping to open up now. I did have a lot of musician friends who were hesitant about the closing. I know it's pretty common for musicians to live paycheck to paycheck, honestly.
Right, it's gig to gig, yeah.
Each gig might pay you very differently. So I think for a lot of people it was a little scary. It still is pretty scary, especially if you're supporting a family, depending on what your living expenses are like. We're having to be very creative. I have to say I'm pretty grateful for the fact that people who do currently have jobs and are comfortable have been more generous than usual in supporting artists that they care about. So, we're also seeing an evolution as far as like online content and how artists are figuring out how to interact with listeners through the internet.
Right. And we should direct people to where online?
Oh, yeah. If they want to find me, I am on Facebook Live. Sometimes I will do a show. But you should find my website, rachelkilgore.com. You can find more information there about live stream shows I might be doing. I'm also, something that I've been really excited about is doing, I've been doing very small, like house concert sized Zoom shows. So it's not like a standard live stream. It's the quality of the, audio and video in Zoom is not quite the same as what you can get on, say, YouTube Live or something, but it's kind of community oriented and you can interact. So I will play a short concert and I'll mute everyone while I sing. And then afterward, we'll like have a conversation about how everyone's doing. And that's been really lovely.
Right. These are some of the things you couldn't do in a concert hall.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's the, best thing we can do to kind of feel like we're really there interacting with one another, and I'm grateful for that. And like you said, I am hesitant. I know, yes, music, art is central in a way, but not in a way that is worth putting our lives at risk or the lives of our loved ones. So I feel like I'm going to be very cautious about returning to the stage and asking people to gather until it feels like we have some, we're in the clear a little bit more.
Right.
I should mention, I shared a Sound and Echo song at the top of this, and we do have actually a live stream concert set for June 7th at 7 p.m., and you can find us on Facebook at Sound and Echo.
All right. We've been speaking with Rachel Kilgore. Thanks. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Robin. Thanks for having me.
And we'll be back after this.
I give.
That was our conversation in May with Rachel Kilgore, a Duluth native who burst on the national singer-songwriter stage, making us all proud. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with more of Rachel's music from her Game Changer album, perhaps most fitting for today in America.
One by one we fall in line to reach for the precious prize.